Yes.
Accession number 30633, Mr. James Farquharson, Reel 2. Now, we're talking about your time at Harrow School from 1933 yes. onwards. We talked about the a bit about the fagging system. Now, was it only running messages, or was it doing menial tasks? Because in some schools, they had to do... they had to, by fagging, it meant doing acting as a servant, almost.
Yes. Now, there were several other things. Very simple things in some cases. One was making toast. Now, there were toasters, and each house monitor, each priv, as we call them, had his own toaster for the week. And you, before supper in the evening, you went down into the dining room where there was an enormous glowing fire made up perfectly for toasting by the house butler. And you could hardly get near it, it was so hot. And you had an immensely long toasting fork. There was, I suppose, six toasting forks because there were six privs. And you then got a piece of bread and you toasted it. And you had to do it absolutely perfectly. It had to be golden brown, no variations of colour on both sides, hot, served exactly at the moment when everybody assembled in the room. You went down first before to do the toasting, and you then took it on a plate and offered it to your priv. And generally speaking, they just took it and said, well, thank you. But if there was any fault anywhere, you had to go back and do it all over again. So one did one's best to get it absolutely right the first time. Now, there was something called a corgroise.
A what?
A corgroise. And that was to do with the officers' training corps. The under officers, now let me think. There were very few under officers, in fact, they were nearly all NCOs, but I think it was the privs in the house, because there were always a certain number who had a corgroise, as he was called, and he, as far as I remember, was appointed for the whole term. And every time there was a parade, he had to prepare his privs' uniform, polish his belt, polish his brasses, buttons, and have it all ready for the chap to come back and change on Wednesday afternoons, I think, was a corps parade. And also there was a shorter parade on Fridays for about half an hour before lunch. Now, I forget if we put uniform on then or if we only did things like lying down and aiming a rifle or going into a miniature shooting
range.
I'll
come to the corps in a bit, yes. Because we'll deal with that.
But anyhow, that was the task. When there was a field day, which there was every... certainly two terms in the year, you had to prepare much more equipment for your fellow, including rolling his raincoat, which had to be perfectly done, attached to the back of his belt, 1 foot long, no projections anywhere, and looking like a Swiss roll, in fact.
So, anything else for the fags to do?
Let me think.
You didn't have to do their rooms.
Oh, yes, fire lighting. In the winter, every room, the house was organised with most senior boys having single rooms, and lower school boys were either in twos or threes in rooms. And every room had a grate, had a fireplace. And in the evening, every boy collected for his room a little metal bucket containing a small amount of coal and a fire lighter. And he was expected to make do with that. And the fire lighting fags had to do the same thing for their priv and get the fire going, and then at intervals in the rest of the evening go and keep the fire up, eking out the small amount of coal so it shouldn't run out too soon. And that was, I think that was about the limit. Other things were to do with privileges and punishment. There was a terrific privilege system. For instance, you wore, of course, various forms of uniform, grey flannel trousers, and a blue jacket, which was known as a bluer, which had mohair covered buttons, and three buttons, and when you first arrived in the school, you had to have all three buttons done up. And halfway through your first term, I think you were allowed to undo the top button. And you also had to wear black socks, all sorts of things, silly things like that, which caused parents appalling expense, because after 1 year, you needn't wear black socks any longer. So of course, every single boy instantly got rid of his black socks and put on bright-coloured socks. Instead, you couldn't be seen around in black socks, or you would still be thought to be a one-yearer. And you worked your way year by year up to a stage where you could mooch around with no buttons done up at all. I mean, that was when you were... these privileges came in at half-term before the actual occasion when you'd done your 2 years or your 1 year and so on. There were other things. It was a 4-year privilege to wear a buttonhole. That always amused me. It meant wear a rose in your buttonhole, of course. To wear a buttonhole, but no one may go up to school in one, it said. There was an enormous ledger in which all the house rules were written, and then there were school rules as well, of course. And so this tremendous discipline, and of course everything was compulsory in those days. Games were compulsory.
Can I ask about the rooms? What was your room like? You know, you shared it with another boy at the start of it.
At the start, yes. The rooms were all very similar. They varied in size.
What were they like then?
They were very rough and ready. They were not smart or modern. They were, in some cases, they were in fact panelled off portions of a much larger room, just a wooden panelled partition. Otherwise, I suppose it was a plaster wall, but it papered. I mean, it was very drab. Everything was sort of a dirty beige colour, and you were provided with a pretty ancient chest of drawers, which had been used over many years by all sorts and conditions of boys. You had a bed which was hoisted up. It was a sort of thing like that against the wall, and the bed hinged at the bottom, and there were housemaids who came and made the beds in the morning, and they heaved the bed up and hooked it with a strap up at the top and drew a curtain across. And then at bedtime, you drew the curtain back and let your bed down. And there was a tendency for us all to equip ourselves strictly against the rules with crystal sets, radios. I remember hearing Hitler in the Orenburg rally on my crystal set. Let's think of any... Oh, the other essential item of furniture was a big, deep, wicker armchair. Well, not an armchair, a sort of basket chair. And if you wanted to, if you were able to, could afford it, you could introduce a little more furniture, another chair or something like that. And I suppose there was a hanging cupboard or something, as well as the chest of drawers, but that I couldn't be sure. And you bought your own pictures or borrowed your own pictures to hang on the walls. Everybody tended to have reproductions, what were they, of things by Van Gogh and people like that, or favourite prints that you framed and put on the wall. Medici prints they were, yes, that's right. And that was about all.
Now, what about a typical day at Harrow? I mean, yes. There's no such thing, and I know it's probably different every term, but if you pick a day, and just that gives us the best idea of it.
The typical day, to begin with, I'll just say that the house staff consisted of a butler and a footman. The footman was called George, as far as I remember, and it was his job to ring a bell, handbell, at 7:15.
So these are the house servants?
Yes.
Not by staff, you don't mean teaching staff.
Oh, no, no. Servants, exactly. And there were also, I suppose, one or two housemaids who went round and helped to make the beds. And there was a matron, of course, as well. And at 7:15, we all had to get up and go to the bathroom, have a Yes, a cold bath. You leapt into the bath. Your object was always to leap in so from such a height that you decanted nearly all the water onto the floor. And there was a shower. That was the same at my prep school, of course. And then you ran naked back to your room and dressed as quickly as possible and went down, and there was breakfast. Well, we had to go up to school, I think, about an hour later. No, about 7:30, I think, 3/4 of an hour later. And that was early school and lasted about 3/4 of an hour. Then back to your house for breakfast. Catering was all
at
done.
At early school, what would you be doing?
Well, you would be doing just an ordinary class. There was certain regular features. For instance, Monday morning, early school was divinity. But I don't remember anything else special about the others. It was just, however, the timetable was made up. I mean, any old subject.
So it could be maths or yes. Latin or anything.
And
it's just one a period would be an hour, or was it a double period? Or
no, it was a single period before breakfast, which I should guess was something like 40 minutes or 45 minutes. Then we did everything, of course, running. We ran back to our house, rushed into the dining room, sat down. There was an enormous sideboard covered with pans of fried eggs and bacon, and you helped yourself. I suppose you could have had, yes, you could have had porridge to start with, and a cup of tea, and toast and marmalade afterwards. You'd gobble that down as fast as you could. You then went and probably went to the loo or something like that, and went up to school again at, I guess, 10 o'clock. Oh, yes, 10 o'clock on three mornings. At 10 o'clock on a Monday morning, there was a sort of assembly in the school speech room, and the headmaster addressed the school and gave out notices and things like that. On Tuesdays, Thursdays and Saturdays, you went for a 10-minute choir practice, singing practice in the chapel. The director of music very skillfully and cleverly taught one a new hymn tune or a new psalm chant in 10 minutes, giving it, you know, you were given the first line, you sang it, you then were given the second line, you sang that, then you sang the first and second, and so you built up quickly and then were dismissed knowing what you had to sing on the Sunday morning at chapel. And after that, so about probably 10 past, or it might be 10 to 10, I think probably at 10 o'clock was the first after-breakfast school period. And
what was a typical lesson like? Well, you know, I mean, was it chalk and talk then, I would imagine, is what they call it? Where, you know.
Yes, it was chalk and talk. I think it's a good description. A master would stand on a dais at the end of the room. There were a number of buildings full of classrooms, and they varied according to the date they were built and that sort of thing. But typically, there would be a dais with a desk on it at the end and a big blackboard behind, or even sometimes two blackboards, which were somehow rolled up and down, as far as I remember. And anybody who misbehaved or didn't attend tended to have the rubber thrown at them by the master. Nobody was injured, as far as I know.
So it's quite formal, old-fashioned style
of
teaching.
Oh, completely old-fashioned, yes, yes. And there again, depended very much on how interested you were and how interesting your master was, your teacher. And you could gain enormously from it, or you could waste your time, really. You'd just sit there scribbling on a piece of paper or something and not attending.
So the first morning lesson was about 10 o'clock.
Yes. Now, I should say that you then had classes through to about 20 past 12. I may be wrong about these things, but it was roughly like that. And then there was a period from, say, 20 past 12 till 1, which was free time, but to some extent organized free time. You could go and have a music lesson. You could go to the rifle range. I, in my latter days, ran a series of gramophone recitals in that period, I remember. And I think you could do nothing if you wanted to, just mooch around. But then came lunch in your house. And after that, depending on the season of the year, in winter, there was football.
Every day, or...?
Well, yes, there was football of a kind every day up to Friday. And you might, whether you were playing football or not, depended on whether you were put down in a game. The captain of games in the house would put up a list of people who would be playing either in a house match against another house, or put up two teams just to practice within the house players. And at the foot underneath that, he would always write, rest, ekka changed. Now that meant exercise changed into football gear, which consisted of white shorts, striped stockings according to the colour of your house, and brown canvas shoes, I think, if you weren't playing a game, and your bluer, your blue blazer. And you were then allowed to go outside the school bounds, which were otherwise enforced. I mean, you were not allowed to go over. And I remember some people took a bus to Hyde Park Corner or to Marble Arch and back in the course of the ekka period. They were the boldest, and sometimes things went badly wrong if they got lost or something. But you had to be out of the house for the duration of what would be otherwise a football game, and then back and change for tea. And on Saturday...
Did you enjoy your sport?
I didn't particularly enjoy my sport, and as soon as I became senior enough to opt whether I played or not, I certainly took to playing squash or fives rather than going on the field. Cricket I enjoyed more than football, I think. We had our own, of course, special game, Harrow football, in the spring term, which was a wonderful game.
People don't know. I mean, they still play it, I'm sure. But
they do, yes.
But what is Harrow football?
Harrow football gradually developed into an organised game. It was a rough and tumble originally. You had a ball which was flat-sided, almost like a fat motor tyre. I mean, it was round that way and then with flat sides and quite large. And on a wet day, it weighed a ton, and on a dry day, it was light as a feather. And the field was about the same size, I suppose, as a soccer field. The goal consisted of rugger posts with no crossbar, and it was known as a base. And there was a halfway line, nothing else marked out, as far as I remember, except the outside boundaries. And there were... by the time I was there, and some time before, it had been organised properly into 11s. Before that, you could have 20 people on each side if you liked, and they needn't be the same number on either side. I mean, it was highly disorganised. What you did, you were allowed to handle the ball. Somebody, a sort of centre forward, I forget the groupings on the field, but they were, generally speaking, there was a solid group of forwards and perhaps a winger on each side and about one chap at the back or something like that. And your object, of course, was to kick the ball between the posts. And the way you did it was to kick the ball forward. You could pick it up and run with it. You could oppose the runner by forming a scrum. But it was not a locked scrum like rugger. You simply went side by side and barged forward. I don't remember how on earth we kept assembled properly for that. But then when the chap with the ball got near enough to be fairly sure of kicking a base but was being opposed, he could turn round, kick the ball backwards into the hands of a man behind, who then dug his heel into the ground and said, yards, and the game stopped. And they were called umpires. There were two umpires always, for some reason, carrying canes, like an officer's swagger stick. And the chap would then measure 3 yards in front of the fellow who was holding the ball, put the cane down, and nobody of the opponents could come within that distance. And the man who'd taken yards was then entitled to do what he liked. I mean, ideally, of course, to kick the ball straight through between the posts at any height. Or if it was rather at one side or something like that, he might kick the ball to somebody else who would then say yards again, provided he kicked it backwards. And that was really the sum total of the game. And you just assembled bases, and the one who scored most bases was the winner. And that happened every fine afternoon, well, not only every fine afternoon, every afternoon, except Wednesday, which was the core parade day. So it was Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. And on Saturday, it was... there were games, but since no other school played the game, we tended to play against teams of old boys and things like that. And that was, there was a proper school 11. And for the rest, boys who were not involved were completely free, as they were on every half holiday, in fact.
Did you have lessons in the afternoon at all? Or?
Well, then, in winter, because it got dark, of course, we had two lessons beginning at about 5 o'clock, 5:30, something like that, I forget. I rather think we got back to our house about 6:45.
But every afternoon was free for one of these activities.
I'm sorry, I'm missing things out. The half holidays, there were very liberal half holidays. We had a half holiday on Tuesday, Thursday and Saturday. So we had evening classes on Monday, Wednesday and Friday only. And in summer, cricket was played, I mean, it was then changed round. The classes were after lunch, and you went down to cricket at about 4:30 or something like that. And lock-up, when everybody had to be back in their houses, was, I think, always 8 o'clock. And the cricket went on until, say, 7:30, just give you time to run up the hill and get you back to your house. And the football happened on the east side, on the flat plain on the east side of the hill. Harrow Hill is like a knife edge. Every house has a garden that just slopes straight down behind. You don't realise it when you go along the high street. And cricket was on the west side in the summer, an enormous great field, where there were 20 cricket pitches. And all sorts of awful things happened. Somebody hit the ball and it went right through another game. And nobody knew who the fielder was. If you weren't attending, you didn't know if it was the chap in your side who kicked who hit the ball, or it was another game further along. But that was what tended to be entertaining. Summer, of course, cricket was affected by weather, whereas football was rarely. Possibly snow might have affected the possibility of playing, but otherwise we played in all weathers. And Harrow football was ideally played in the most appalling wet and mud. Everybody came back from football caked in mud. And you slithered about all over the place. It was the ideal game for somebody who was not really a good games player at all, but a bit of a toughie.
Yeah, so after, and then you'd have a, when it wasn't a half, you'd have a couple of lessons.
Yes, that's right. And then you were given liberal amounts of prep.
Now,
to do with.
Again, prep's a word that people don't now necessarily know.
Homework,
what it means.
Yes. Now, prep probably involved writing an essay or something like that, and there were various things.
So, would you be in a classroom but working on your own? Or
no, you'd be in your own room in your house after supper, and you do your prep and...
was about an hour or a bit longer? Or
I think it was an hour on one kind of evening and an hour and a half on the other. Well, it was perhaps a half holiday you had a longer prep because you hadn't had an afternoon school or something like that. And you generally delivered written work to whoever had set you the prep next day. Or you were sometimes given a longer job and you perhaps had to go specially to the master's house or lodgings, wherever he was, to deliver your work. Oh, and if you were punished, that's another thing. If you were given lines, 200 double was a favourite thing. That was to do with the roll call. If you were in the wrong position at the roll call and didn't come through in the right order, when there was a master standing on the steps with a list of the whole school, and you went past and touched your cap to him and said, "Here, sir," as you went by. And if there was anything wrong, he would haul you up and you'd go and stand on the steps behind him. And then there would be a sort of court held in the famous fourth form room, the old original schoolroom of the school, in which he would dole out punishments of one sort and another.
Now, what kinds of punishments did they have? What range of punishments? From the mildest, which would probably be lying to...
Well, there were different kinds of punishment, of course. That was essentially a school punishment and was, generally speaking, only concerned with bills, it was called, which was in the schoolyard, where on half holidays at 6 o'clock... I really can't remember now. We'd be on half holidays at 4 o'clock, perhaps in winter, and 6 o'clock in summer. Everybody would assemble in the yard, and there were stones marking out a sort of square space in front of the steps. And the master stood two or three steps up in his cap and gown with a board with all the names on, and he would call them out. And each boy in turn, as I said, went by and touched his cap and said, "Here, sir," and the assemblage were all around the outside of this square area, and they had to form themselves up into a line just at the right moment to file through, and then they were free and off they went. And the punishments varied. It could be a hundred double if you could persuade the master.
Now, what's a hundred double?
Well, this was double lined paper which he would hand to you. Paper ruled with pink lines. Sort of vaguely halfway from ordinary lined paper to a music score or something. And you had to, usually, to copy out Latin verse. It was a most soul-destroying occupation.
So it wasn't repeating, "I must not," Lord.
No, no. As far as I can remember, you could almost, so long as it was Latin, you could pick what you liked. And you just wrote it out, and you had to do it beautifully. Proper copper plate script, touching the top and lower line and so on. And deliver it by lock-up, 8 o'clock, to the bill master's lodgings, which could be quite a way off. I mean, within the bounds of the school, but it was a terrible sweat getting it done in the time. And I forget what happened if you failed. I think you jolly well delivered it, and it wasn't 200 lines, and you hoped that he didn't notice or something.
What other punishments were?
Other punishments were... punishments, of course, for misdemeanors in class were reported to your housemaster by the form master, and your housemaster dealt with you as he thought appropriate. There was virtually no flogging in the school at all, except of one kind, which I'll tell you separately. In the house, it would normally be... light, having your light put out earlier at night or something like that. Or going to roll the hard tennis court and things like that. Generally speaking, as far as the housemaster and myself, when I was head of the house as well, were concerned, we tried to make it constructive, do something that was useful. But the house punishments were doled out by the head of the house. And there were all sorts of things. For instance, if you defaulted on your duties as a day boy or something like that, you would be punished. And the most common form of punishment was early calling, which meant that when the bell rang at 7 o'clock, quarter to seven, you had to be fully dressed, and you went in and woke up the head of the house and said, reporting for call-up, Gold, or whatever the man's, the head of the house's name was, and he would say, "All right," and probably roll over in bed, not get up, and that was good enough. But if you you were quite often punished as a corgroise for not doing your officer's uniform properly. And in that case, it was far worse, because you had to report at 7:15 in full military uniform, with brasses polished, leather belt polished, leather cap strap polished, all sorts of things. And we wore what they call knickerbockers and putties in those days, and you had to roll your putties and have them exactly symmetrically rolled round your leg and ending up on the outside of the right place and tied round with a string and all sorts of things like that. It's extraordinary to look back on now. And we took it all for granted. Nobody.
What about the oh, that's